Might be we give you a proper shield at some point, but best to start with something simple, easy enough to get used to.
The buckler did seem small and easy enough to wield, but it was surprisingly heavy.
What's the most powerful muscle in your body?
I thought about it for a moment, and then tapped at my helm. Muldus laughed, and then hooted.
Ooh, and here I thought you were supposed to be half clever.
It's your legs, your hips. You get in a fight, everything you do starts there. Stance, movement, generating power and follow-through, controlling range. Legs. Now, you got the legs of a wee chicken. But truth is, almost anybody can learn to defend themselves a little. We got girls in the company no bigger than you, who manage not to get killed. Reggie, for one. So I ain't given up hope entirely. Stance first, as that's your base. Get those legs a little wider than shoulder width.
I did, and he looked me over.
Hmm.
Then he pushed me with one hand and nearly sent me toppling over.
Got to have a solid base. Widen it a bit. Nope, too wide. You got to be able to move as well.
I adjusted, and he said,
there you go. Now, drop that sword foot back some. Angle the toe out.
He circled me and inspected.
Could be worse. Now, bend the knees. Little more. Keep the weight on the balls of your foot. Right. How do you feel?
I felt my legs in a completely unnatural position that made me look an ass, but said, I feel like a coiled spring. He slapped me on the back, and while it wasn't done with malice, it still almost knocked the wind out of me. But at least it didn't knock me over.
Right. So let's see you hold that buckler.
I held it out away from my body, arm nearly straight.
What are you plaguing doing, warding off a moth? No, bring the elbow back. Now, tuck it close to your hip. That's it. Not too tight, but cocked. Coiled, like you said. With a little shield like that, you're going to be doing active blocking. Know what that is?
I shook my head, and he said,
course you plaguing don't, because you know shit all. Your best bet is to avoid a blow altogether, but sometimes that just ain't realistic. Active blocking means you'll be moving the buckler around a lot.
Muldus adjusted my arm.
Getting ahead of myself here, though. We'll get to blocking later. But the only way to do that is to have the buckler close to start. You can shove it out, intercept, or deflect a blade. Smash someone in the mouth real good. But first, keep the shield elbow anchored like that. Don't want to start overextended to start. Plus, it'll get heavier quicker than you can imagine. So waving it around like that will sap your strength.
I didn't want to block anything and wanted to hit somebody in the mouth even less. But he made sense. So I nodded.
Right. Now, slowly pull that barbarian slasher free.
I reached for it, and he added,
slowly. I'd tell you to go get a blunt, but none of them got the curve like the grass dog thing there, and the balance would be different. Got to train with something that matches what you'll be using when you get stuck in. So, that one it is. But it ain't a toy, ain't even a knife, it's a sword, and even if savages made it, you'll treat it with respect, or I'll knock you in the dirt. You hear me?
I nodded, and held it out in front of me. He said,
now, we're a long way from talking about how to wield it. We'll get there sometime if you don't get yourself dead first. But in order to have a proper stance, you need to feel the weight of the whole kit. So, how do you think you should hold that?
I thought about seeing Venduro fight, or Muldus, or anyone else who wielded a weapon or a sword. While there were variations, depending on the weapon, most favored a cocked elbow tucked in, and the weapon angled out above the shoulder. So I tried to approximate that. Muldus looked me over, walked around me, pushed my arm here, changed the angle of the curved blade, kicked a foot, forced me to readjust a little, but not much, really. I smiled, and he scowled.
You've been riding with us more days than I would have liked, if you didn't somehow manage to pick up one plaguing thing from watching us gut hornmen and brunesmen. I think you were worse than useless. Wipe that plaguing smile off your dumb face, Scribbler, or I'll pound you to paste, you hear?
The smile was gone in an instant. Sweat dripped down underneath the helm padding and into my eyes, and I reached up to wipe it off, forgetting for a moment that I was holding a weapon. I clanged the small hilt off the bridge of my helm, and Muldeus laughed.
Serves you right for getting cocky, you green bastard. Now, you got a stance of sorts going on here, but you stay in one place rooted to the ground, you'll be dead quicker than spit. So we got to build some movement in. We'll start real plaguing basic, so I don't have to repeat myself a dozen times. You ready?
And so it went, for the next hour. Muldeus showed me how to take small steps on the balls of my feet, keep my knees bent, maintain my balance, all of which I did poorly and with a great heaping of derision. When we were done, Muldeus said,
Moving out soon. That's a start. Not a great one, but it'll have to do.
He started to walk away, and after sliding the sword back into the scabbard without stabbing myself, I said, Thank you. For helping me today, I mean. Muldeus stopped.
Won't just be today. You got a whole lot of learning to do before you stop embarrassing yourself in this outfit.
Fair enough. But why? You could have told Vinduro or one of the others to.
Because,
he said, the rest of the sentence hanging unsaid for a while, as if he were deciding whether or not to actually speak the words. Then,
That old goat was plaguing right. Just now, I'm not much good in a fight. Not like to instill confidence or steel nerves. The bastard wounded my pride on the other side of the God Veil. But, as plaguing usual, he spoke true. Hated hearing it, but there it is. Only thing I ever been real exceptional at was cutting down enemies myself or inspiring the boys to do it. Knowing I couldn't do either back there, well, like eating hot stinging nettles, and then shitting them out.
Muldeus looked at me, and while the left eye was half hidden by a droopy eyelid, the right was fever bright.
Only other thing I got any real gift for, besides drinking copious amounts of alcohol, is turning tender recruits into hardened sons of oars. Still better at that? Than any man here. So it's me, you plaguing lucky bastard.
He headed back to his horse. I picked up my brass case and did the same. As we started riding again, I considered moving up alongside the captain and gently bringing up the idea of exploring further east on this side of the Godvale, as Sofjian suggested. But I knew how he would respond. So there was nothing to be gained except another earful. And I'd had enough of that for one afternoon. The rest of the day's journey was without incident. Chapter 12 The third day was more of the same. More riding, more writing, more training with a battered but not broken Muldeus, and more exhausted slumber after the miles were behind us. But the fourth day on the other side of the God Vale, it looked like everything might change. A scout rode up, not galloping, but definitely a canter. I recognized him from some of the other reports he delivered, a lad named Dunkis. Usually his long face gave him away, but this time it was difficult to tell what lay ahead. Braelar said,
Report, Sildoon.
Dunkis replied, There's a city cap ahead. Big one. Vinduro, Sofjian, and Muldeus all started talking at once, and Braelar shouted,
Silence, the lot of you!
Then he looked at Dunkis again.
Populated?
He asked with the same tone you might inquiring after something mythical or supernatural.
No, Dunkis said,
Dead? Long time from the looks of it? Maldus shook his head.
Next time you lead with that, you dumb cock. Instead of, there's a big plaguing city up yonder.
Braelar said. The lieutenant has a point. You are certain it's empty, then? If it's large, you couldn't have explored all that far. Dunkis took that as the challenge it was.
Had four men combing over it after day. It's older than dirt. 1,000 years at least, and abandoned near as long from the looks of it. The wall and stone buildings are still standing, some of them leastwise, though some are collapsed here or there from disrepair. And anything wood or wattle has gone to waste, falling over, warped, overgrown with weeds and whatnot. But that's the queer thing. Usually you see something like that all abandoned on the other side, temple or whatnot. It's been picked over, scavenged. Other settlements, steel-lead roofing, stones that could still be used, whatever. But not this city. Just old, dead, and falling over all on its own accord. Nobody took nothing that I could see. And there's nobody there, Cap. Not a plaguing one.
The captain remained skeptical, and wanted to ride close enough to see for himself. 2 hours later, we crossed a rise and looked down a shallow valley at the remains of what was once a city bigger than Rivermost, but smaller than Aelspell. Dunkiss's assessment had been accurate, as far as I could tell. Sections of the stone curtain wall had collapsed, the rubble core spilling all over the broken stones like a gaping wound, but one delivered by the siege of time rather than any invading army. While there wasn't enough thick vegetation in the area to completely overtake the structures, nearly every standing building was covered in unchecked ivy or moss or fronds or weeds. All men had seen deserted places before on the other side of the Godvale, temples, small villages, forts. But I'd never heard of an abandoned settlement this large, and it was exactly as Dunkis described, haunted-looking. As if the occupants had simply disappeared at the exact same time and left the city to fall beneath the weight of ages. Even from far away, it was far more unnerving than the plague village we rode through, and I couldn't suppress a shiver. Maldus looked at the captain.
We going in, Cap?
Braelar shaded his eyes, scanned the dead settlement, and shook his head in the negative. The company rode by at a distance, every soldier staring at the empty, abandoned city, mumbling or cursing, but unable to look away. And on the fifth day on the other side of the Godvale, everything really did change. Chapter 13 Rudgy had been accompanying the scouts, and she came riding back earlier than usual. I moved ahead so I was within hearing distance when she reported.
There's a forest ahead, Cap.
Braelar asked. And you thought this worthy of my attention, why exactly? She sat up straight in the saddle, despite having ridden hard to deliver the news.
Oh, I'll wager this isn't like any forest you've seen before, Cap. Or heard.
Heard? Aye, Cap. She maintained a level expression, but there was a strange tightness in her voice as well. Nervousness? Esmorgon shook his huge head and said,
Is the sergeant of scouts getting scared by trees? Is that what I just heard?
She stiffened and replied,
We're on the wrong side of the Godvale, Lieutenant. Every little plaguing thing makes me jumpy. But these trees, or columns, or whatever they plaguing are, they aren't natural.
Esmorgon rumbled out a laugh.
Lasses being in armor ain't natural, but it don't make me quiver in my boots.
Muldoon said,
What are you plaguing going on about, Sergeant? What did you hear?
She took a deep breath and addressed the shorter lieutenant.
First off, these trees, if that's what they are, don't look a thing like any trees I ever seen. Tall, but no limbs. Just big trunks covered in some purplish moss. But that's not the strange thing. Well, it's a touch strange, whoever heard of trees with no limbs, but the strangest thing is the sound coming from the grove, from the tree columns.
What kind of sound?
Vindero asked. She looked at him. Kind of a keening. Braelar said.
Did you say keening?
That I did, Cap. My people, my clan, they had this awful dirge for the wailing thing they were wont to do any time anyone died. Went on for weeks at a time, day and night. Just terrible, a pox on the ears, really. This sounds a lot like that, only my people weren't tree columns. On the other side of the Godvale.
The captain replied. Well, now my curiosity is piqued. Is it due north?
Rudgy said. Northeast. That's the other thing. There's a big sluggish river ahead, heading out of the Godvale. Not moving fast, but pretty deep. Probably the Silt Hood, but hard to say. Either way, it will be tough to cross without a ford, so it's going to force us east some. This grove is east of the river.
Very good, then. Northeast we go.
We heard the forest before we saw it. Keening was an apt description. It immediately reminded me of something I hadn't heard in many years. I don't remember a great deal from my childhood at the inn with my mother, but there was a traveler who frequented it, who always brought a strange wooden horn with him, nearly as long as he was tall. It produced a grief-stricken, baleful sound, and he sang sad tunes to accompany. He was not popular. The noise sounded like a cross between that peculiar horn and a chorus of women wailing, as Rudgy described. She gave Asmorgon a smug look, but he didn't say anything, though he did draw his long pole arm out of its sheath and prop it on his armored shoulder. We heard the sound increase, one wail intermingling with another in a horrible chorus, and then the incredibly odd forest came into view as well. If the sound it made was disconcerting, the trees themselves were no less so. We came around a bend and saw the first of them. Rudgy had done a good job describing those as well. The trunks were completely limbless, with every inch covered in a dusky purple moss, and they rose up higher than dreadshade pines. They did resemble columns more than trees, and I would have mistaken them for as much, until we got closer. They were asymmetrical, some growing almost perfectly straight, others curved slightly, with a few of the shorter ones bent and contorted, as if they were trying to get out of the shade of their larger siblings to drink up some sun. And if the oddity of limblessness and complete coverage by moss weren't enough, as we rode up to the first, I saw what must have been making the noise. Each tree column was marked by hundreds or even thousands of holes, most the width of a few fingers. Whenever the wind blew, each column took the sound, amplified it, distorted it. The whole forest was a morose chorus. The company rode around the outskirts of the forest. While there were a few stray columns close to us, and some even further west towards the Godvale, they grew tallest and thickest and most crowded to the east in the grove Rudgy mentioned. The horses were nervous, and their riders weren't much better. Judging by the murmuring and exclamations behind me, no one had ever seen the like either. While the company wasn't exactly used to the Godvale or easy around it, it was something they had seen, or at least heard about, all their lives. But these tree columns were completely alien. I looked over at Sofjin and saw awe and pleasure on her face. Braelar sent Rudgy ahead again to rejoin the other Sildoon who were scouting. After the initial chatter died down, we rode in silence for 2 more hours. Human silence, anyway. The tree columns continued their endless lament, crying out for some loss that had wounded them immeasurably. It was disquieting in every way possible. We were about to rest the horses when Rudgy came galloping back to us, horse lathered, her freckled face flushed and sweaty. She stopped in front of the captain and didn't even wait for the order to report, but started right in, speaking fast.
Never going to guess what's ahead, Cap.
He sighed. No, I expect I won't, and I'm not especially in the mood for riddles, so let's dispense with the clue-giving and cut directly to the specifics, yes?
Men.
Men.
Climbing trees.
Men climbing trees. She nodded,
still looking excited. Ah, yep, or columns, whatever you want to call them.
No one said anything. Muldoose looked at Venduro, as Morgan looked at the dusky columns around us. Sofjin looked at me and smiled, only slightly less rapacious than usual. Finally, Braelar said,
And why, pray tell, are there men climbing these extraordinarily sad columns? To jump to their deaths?
Reggie replied, Looks like they're working, in harnesses, pulling some weird spikes out of the trunks, putting them in bags, and that's where all the holes came from.
Braelar leaned forward.
And did they see you?
Cap, I have to say I'm kind of insulted. I'd be a pretty piss-poor sergeant of scouts if I got that easy.
How many? He asked.
She thought about it. There were a handful working the columns on the edge of the forest, but couldn't see deep in and didn't want to risk getting too close, on account of the not wanting to be seen thing. So I raced back here.
Again, there was a long stretch of silence as everyone considered the unexpected revelation and what it might mean. I had read of a small handful of men parting the Godveil, separated by centuries, and while the accounts specified them coming back, some must have stayed on this side for some reason. But why? And how many? Had they repopulated this side of the Godveil? Why had the gods not expunged them as well, or struck them down as interlopers? Finally, Muldoose said,
Looks like the plaguing deserters didn't abandon the whole lot of us, did they? Kept some on this side to go spike-picking on the weirdest plaguing tree things ever seen. Makes total sense.
Sofjin looked at Braelar.
It seems we didn't have to stray far from your chosen path to see the exceptional after all. Marvelous, isn't it?
Braelar ignored her and turned to Muldoose.
Convey the order. The main force will follow, but at a discreet distance, at least until we've ascertained what is afoot ahead, and if it poses any threat.
Aye, Cap.
As Muldoose started down the line, and Braelar and Sofjian started riding ahead, as Morgan called back,
Speak slow and sure, mushrooms.
Muldoose paused, looked about ready to turn and confront as Morgan, and then kept riding.
Venduro said, You might think you're just jolting his jewels, but I'm pretty sure Muldoose ain't thinking the same thing at all.
As Morgan regarded the much smaller man,
Look at you, a few days in the mighty officers' club, and you gone and forgot who your elders are. Let me clear it up for you, squirrel. I don't much care what that damaged fuck thinks, and got even less of a concern what weird little stones you got spinning around in that hollowed-out gourd of yours, Lieutenant. Keep it to yourself.
The ogre rode ahead to catch up to Braelar and Sofjian. Venduro looked at me and shook his head.
Plague me, but there's some sour horse sons in this company.
Don't worry about it, Ven, I replied. I, for one, am always interested in what those weird little stones are doing. He laughed and hit me in the shoulder.
Come on, then. Let's go see what these monkey men are doing on the wrong side of the world.
With the remainder of the company 100 yards behind us, Braelar and his retinue had dismounted and walked among the mournful columns. Most of us had crossbows in hand, though Sofjin had her Rancer, and as Morgan his massive, inelegant chopper, that looked like it could cleave a horse in twain. Reggie said,
There's a clearing ahead. More of these columns on the other side, though like I said, most have spikes sticking out of them, running up and down the length. That's where we saw them.
Braelar asked,
And you saw no men in armor? You are sure?
Sure as I could be, Cap. Like we talked about, I didn't want to get in too close. Still some sun left this afternoon, and not enough good cover. Didn't want to give up our location. But I didn't see any glinting on anything else. So, nobody in metal armor close, that's for certain.
Very good, Braelar said. Take Dunkis and circle around, further into the forest. Make sure it's just us and the workers and the columns of woe, yes?
Columns of woe, eh? She smiled. Funny, Cap. Right funny.
He sighed. Just go.
As Reggie set off on foot, Braelar regarded his men and his sister.
I'd hoped to find only squirrels and thrushes in our path, but it seems we have more to contend with.
This is a priceless opportunity, not to be squandered, Sofjin said. You are something of a master squanderer, so I do hope you embrace this one. Vinduro asked, What are they plaguing doing here, Cap?
Braelar looked at the columns around us. Besides harvesting the most bizarre trees in the world, you mean? I have no idea whatsoever. Like you, after seeing the ruins of the city, I imagined we were the only men tromping about on this side of the Godvale. Clearly, that was an erroneous assumption. But it is important we raise no alarms here. The forest has pushed us as close to the Godvale as we dare go.
Muldoon said,
Maybe it's time to quit worrying about plaguing opportunities and head back through.
Before Braelar could reply, Sofjin added, That is the definition of squandering.
Braelar glared at her and said, It is too soon, Muldoon. The Imperials could be camped just on the other side, and if they get our trail again, we will have the glorious and suicidal end that Asmorgon there seems to be clamoring for. No, we do not return yet.
Asmorgon said,
So what's the plan, Cap? Going to kill these climbers?
Braelar shook his head. They are not soldiers. I don't kill unarmed men. Well, unless absolutely necessary, or they have provoked me, which is not the case here.
Vinduro asked, What is the play then, Cap? Capture a few, question them.
And then kill them,
Asmorgon offered.
Muldoon said,
Even for a plaguing Sildoon, you are a bloodthirsty bastard. You know that, Ogre.
Aye, best remember that, little man.
Braelar said, Depending on who they are, or where they come from, we might not even have a language in common. Putting one to the question could be fruitless.
Sofjin pointed at me. You are forgetting, Bray, that you have one here who speaks a myriad of languages, both alive and dead.
I replied, I read them well enough, and can write several, but speaking is something else altogether. I'm not sure how much of an asset I would be.
But Braelar made up his mind.
When Reggie returns and we confirm there is no immediate threat, we will approach them. Weapons in scabbards. We have no idea what kind of response we will get, but even the dullest lout in the world knows a weapon when he sees one. And this is one time we do not wish to terrify or subjugate.
Asmorgon replied,
Got to speak my mind here, Cap, but thinking...
I know your mind already. We proceed as I say we proceed. If you have a problem with that, you can leave now and try your hand parting the Godvale on your own.
Even the ogre shut up after that. The captain, his retinue, and a handful of Sildoon crossed the clearing and approached the spiked columns on the other side. As Reggie reported, there were a few men at various heights, shirtless, skin like bronze, covered in sweat as they swung on leather harnesses, pulling strange, almost translucent spikes as long as their forearms out of the dense mossy trunks, and slipping them in satchels around their waists. The men were working with some tools, chisels and small hammers, as the spikes were lodged in tightly. None of them saw us approaching, and the horses' hooves were muffled by the carpet of moss that littered the floor between the tree columns. We were 20 paces away when the closest worker finally saw us. His eyes went wide, and he would have fallen 20 feet if not for the harness, as he lost his grip on the trunk and slipped before yelling something. The other workers turned and saw us, and then they too started yelling to each other, eyes filled with terror, as if they were seeing monsters, rather than men with horses.
Muldoon said,
Huh, didn't figure on that. Good thing we aren't holding steel, they'd be shitting themselves just now. Might do it anyway.
As Scorn pawed at the loamy earth, Braelar raised both hands to show he wasn't armed.
Well met. I should begin by asking if you understand what I am saying, yes?
The three men in harness continued shouting at each other, gesturing wildly, swinging on the trunks. One tried to climb higher, before realizing he risked impaling himself if he did. Another seemed to be trying to move and hide on the other side of the column, for all the good it would do him. The captain tried again in Anjurian, but had no better results. If anything, that only seemed to frighten them more, as they were nearly jabbering to each other. Braelar turned to me.
"Diplomacy will die an untimely death if we cannot communicate. Can you make out anything they are saying?"
As terrified as the men were, it would have been hard to understand them even if they were speaking fluent Sildunian. I can't be sure with all the shouting, but they might be speaking some kind of old Anjurian, or some variation of it. Though I stress might, as I said, I
speak inadequately, yes, yes, I was listening.
But poor fluency is better than none at all. Try to calm them down and see if you can make anything out. Otherwise, I might be tempted to let Asmorgon chop them down from there so my sweet sister can interrogate them. And no one wants that, especially the tree men, yes? I nodded, removed my helm, and handed it to Vindoro. After taking a deep breath and running my hand through my damp hair to stall for time, I walked my horse forward slowly, arms outstretched, trying to frame different statements in my head in old Anjurian, and finally settling on the simplest one. I looked at all three men in turn.
"Hello," I said. "My name is Archimondos."
The climber closest to me stared, his large nose flaring, sinews cording and rippling on his lean body. While he still appeared mostly terrified, it was tinged in something else as well. Confusion. He had understood something. Or at least, it looked as if he had. I tried again.
"We intend you no harm," I said, haltingly, and then rephrased, as the first construction had been wrong. "What are your names?"
All three were silent now, no longer yammering, but not speaking either.
"Your names?" I asked. "My name is Archimondos. Archie." "What are your names?"
The closest climber looked back at the others nervously. He whispered something, and another shook his head fast and said,
"No."
And then something else I couldn't understand. It wasn't old Anjurian, but it sounded like some derivative. The third man pointed at the Sildoon behind us, arm waving, finger wagging, speaking quickly as he shook in his harness. Most of it was lost on me, but it sounded as if one word was beast, or the equivalent. I looked over my shoulder, and then back to the man who was pointing, listening as he said something else, and then beast again, his eyes bulging, stubbly face almost a rictus of fear, the muscles in his thin, ropey arms all standing out. I rode back to the captain. "It's not us they're terrified of. Or not just us. They are afraid of the horses, I think." Muldus barked out a laugh. Vindoro said,
"The horses? What are they plaguing afraid of the horses for? It's not like we're riding rippers."
Sofjian said, "Horses are not frightening, if you are familiar with them. But what if they've never seen them before?" Everyone looked at her. As Morgan said,
"What are you plaguing going on about, witch? They're men. What do you mean they ain't seen horses?"
She regarded the belligerent giant. "You truly are a dull oaf, aren't you? Men from our half of the Godvale know horses. We've ridden them for millennia. Even those who couldn't earn enough in a lifetime to buy and care for a horse have seen others on them. But this side? We have no idea what's familiar to them, or how long they have been here. But what if they have no horses here? What if they have never seen their like before? Perhaps they think we are beasts ourselves with four legs, or they are creatures of myth, monstrous or alien to them. Who can say? But I suggest we dismount." As Morgan said,
"What you're saying is you got no plaguing idea, do you?"
He turned to Braelar.
"Let me chop them down. Then we'll have a nice little talk, up close and personal."
Braelar replied, "We dismount." We all did as commanded,
all of us watching the men in the columns as we did. When we set our feet on the ground, one gasped, and the three of them began talking quickly to each other. Braelar said, "Now try it again, Arki. Tell them we are not horse monsters and mean them no harm. Find out who they are and where their settlement is." I gave Enduro my reins and walked forward, saying in an elegant old Anjurian, "Please tell me your names and where you are from. We will not harm you." I didn't add, "Unless you take too long to gather your courage and speak to us," as that seemed less than productive. The closest climber looked down. The two behind him nearly hissed, urging him to be silent, from what I could tell. But he finally spoke to me. "We are farmers, only farmers. Do not hurt us." I wondered if this was how old Anjurian was meant to sound, or if the dialect had changed so much to muddy the words, but I was pretty sure I understood the gist of what he said. Even if that was no kind of farming I'd ever seen, and they weren't holding radishes. Maybe the old Anjurian word meant harvester. "We will not hurt you," I said. "Will you come down, please, so we may talk more easily? We mean you no harm. I swear it." The lean leader looked back at the other two, and they shook their heads in unison. Then one suddenly twisted around to look deeper into the column forest. It took me a moment to make out the sound of hooves over the low keening sound the columns made, but then I saw a Sildoon weaving between them, riding hard for our position. Whatever meager progress I made with the column climbers disappeared in an instant, as they pointed at her and started yelling something at me again. But Rudgy was no less frightened than they were. Her face was pale, and her expression and demeanor sent a shiver up my spine. Braelar saw it as well and asked sharply, "What is it, Sergeant? Are we under attack?"
"Yes, no, I can't say, Cap.
He stepped closer to her and drew Blood Sender off his belt.
"Report, what did you see?"
She stuttered.
"Cap, it was..."
And then she shook her head as if to clear it.
"Two of them coming that I saw. Two coming. Got to do something."
He reached up and snapped his fingers in front of her face.
"Master yourself, soldier, at once. What approaches? Be quick about it."
She looked at him, blanched, swallowed hard, and tried again.
"Can't say. Huge. They were huge. Never seen anything so big."
"Men?"
Braelar asked, though from the tone he knew the answer already.
"No. No, Cap. I can't say what they plaguing are, but not... they aren't men."
I heard the closest climber say in a heated whisper,
"Overlords. The overlords come."
It was hard to tell if it was a threat or a warning. I looked at Braelar and told him what I heard, finishing with,
"Maybe we should go."
The captain pulled his helm over his head and mounted his horse.
"Whatever they are, there are only two of them. Still, it never hurts to be prepared." He pointed at Venduro. "Get the company here. Now."
Venduro mounted up and rode off as the remaining Sildoon climbed into their saddles as well. Braelar ordered,
"Sildoon, ready crossbows and switch to sidearms if and when they close. These columns are too crowded to get off more than one good shot."
Sofjin said, "And what would you have me do, O puissant warrior?
Your range is no less than our own, and might even be more. Work your memory craft on whoever,
or whatever,
whoever approaches. Take them down without killing them, if possible."
"If possible,"
she said, holding her rancor above her head with one hand, flexing the fingers of the other outstretched hand. "I make no promises." I mounted up, fumbling a bit with a crossbow as I spanned it, but a little less so than usual. The men in the harnesses were all frantically trying to look behind them. I just finished dropping the devil's claw on the stock when I heard something. It sounded like a faint drumbeat. I realized with my gut churning that they were probably footfalls of some kind.
and then I saw movement between columns 50 feet away. A huge shape appeared and disappeared, weaving its way towards us. Whatever it was half again as tall as any man save as Morgan, maybe taller, and it was coming fast. Braelar called out, "One shot, then draw weapons and spread out." The jackals all raised their crossbows, and I did the same. My horse blasted air out its nose as it jerked its head side to side, and it was all I could do to keep in place as he stamped about. I heard the nasty twang as three crossbows loosed around me, and then two more, and I looked up, and wished I hadn't. Seeing the Ripper for the first time in Alespell was like watching a monster emerge out of a nightmare to walk among us. But this was so much worse. The creature was at least 10 feet tall, broad and densely muscled, body and limbs much larger proportionately than any human's, its skin the color of ash. It wore some kind of thick, hardened leather armor affixed with irregular brass plates, moving faster now as it charged towards us, dodging between columns for cover, wielding some sort of gigantic, spiked club. But more bizarre and awful than its monstrous size was the head. It had no eyes, with small spikes protruding from where they would have been as part of a crown of horns that wrapped around its head. My bladder nearly set free as I recognized that head from temple ruins and the flail heads on Bloodsounder, and I almost dropped my crossbow. One of the bolts struck the giant in the shoulder, with the other two sinking into the mossy columns behind it, and the creature bellowed so loud and fierce, I froze. Off to my right, Sofjin closed her eyes and splayed her fingers. The creature halted briefly, and I raised my crossbow, hoping she would fell it. But the giant slowed only for a moment, shook its horned head twice, and then came on again. My fingers were trembling as I took aim, and I squeezed the long steel trigger. The bolt skidded off a brass plate on its harness. I dropped my crossbow, felt for Loy's sword, missed it, and looked down to wrap my hand on the hilt as I drew it so quickly I nearly sliced my other arm and my horse's neck. I unhooked the buckler Muldus had given me, wishing it were larger, wishing I were hundreds of miles away, limbs feeling weak as something beyond nightmares bore down on us. The creature bellowed again as it loped between the final columns and came on, and my horse started to turn away, and I desperately wanted to let it. My first instinct was to jerk on the reins when I felt the horse spook, but remembered Venduro telling me that would only unnerve the beast more. So I reached forward and put my hand on its neck. It didn't do much, as it probably sensed I was terrified, but at least it didn't bolt. The Sildoon had spread out, and there was a moment when the giant was unsure which of us to attack first. It raised the thick haft of its weapon above its head, and I saw that the spikes were the translucent things the climbers had been harvesting, and three protruded from either side at the end. While the giant had no eyes to see, it moved its head around until it fixed on me, being the closest. Then it charged at me. I froze, knowing nothing I could do could possibly hurt this mammoth monster, that it was surely dead, when two more bolts struck it, one ricocheting off, the other embedded in its chest inside the leather armor, but only enough to make it more angry. It plucked the bolt out with one huge hand, like a tiny thorn, roared, and then changed direction for the one who shot it. That soldier made the mistake of trying to span his weapon with the devil's claw, rather than drawing his sword or riding away. The creature took three massive strides around a column and swung its club. The blow hoisted the soldier out of the saddle, and his body went flying, blood spraying from the three gaping holes in his chest from the spikes. They had punctured the lamellar as if it were wet parchment. As Morgan rode past the giant, looking small for the first time, his chopper in both hands. But the giant started pivoting, and he had to veer off, delivering a blow. As the giant turned, Muldus came at it from the other side, slashing at its legs before riding past as well. The giant spun, but didn't even try to deliver a blow, knowing it was too late. And then it moved around another column, bearing a shallow gash. It seemed its hide was nearly as thick as its armor. The giant charged at Braelar, club raised high, and two more Sildoon rode between to protect their captain, one wielding a sword and shield, another a mace and shield. The eyeless giant couldn't have seen them, shouldn't have been able to see anything, but it moved and reacted as if it knew exactly where everyone was. It took one quick stride and brought the club down in a vicious arc, striking one Sildoon at an angle across the collarbone. I heard it snap and saw the spikes bite down deep, again puncturing armor. The horse reared, hooves flailing at the monster in front of it. The giant struck the horse with a backhanded blow across the head that felled it. The soldier was ripped out of the saddle as the giant pulled the club and finally freed the spikes again. The other Sildoon rode forward, striking the giant in the arm with its mace. As the rider tried to move off, the giant spun with surprising speed, grabbed the soldier by the back of the head, hoisted him out of the saddle as if he were a child, and swung him against the nearest column. I heard the man's neck or back break as the body hit the mossy bark and dropped to the loamy earth. Braelar charged from the other side, the twin flail heads striking the giant in the ribs as he passed. Again, the creature knew that assailant was too quick and turned to face another, blood oozing from another small wound, but showing no signs of slowing. As soon as the captain was clear, several more crossbow bolts struck the giant, two sticking, the rest flying off in different directions. The giant roared, clearly furious at having no foe close enough to destroy. I saw a blur of red next to me as Sofjin rode at the monster's back, Rancer cocked near her shoulder. She called out something, and the massive creature turned to face her, but she had no intention of closing. She threw her weapon and veered off before it could strike at her. The Rancer hit the giant in the throat, and while it seemed to strike deeper than the bolts, it reached up, pulled the pole arm free, and tossed it away, bellowing in fury and pain. Two more bolts struck it in the back, one ricocheting off a brass plate, another puncturing the hardened leather, but not biting deep. The giant sprang off to its right, using the columns for protection as it closed on another soldier who hadn't had the time or sense to ride away from it. The giant swung its spiked club, and the Sildoon instinctively tried to block the blow with his shield, which erupted into broken wood and a shattered steel rim. The giant brought the haft up, reversed direction, and caught the wounded Sildoon in the side of the helm. The spikes didn't penetrate the steel, but they didn't need to. The force of the blow dented the helm in half a foot and caved in the soldier's skull. The jackal was dead before he hit the ground. I realized I was rooted to the spot, paralyzed, and cursed myself, sheathing my sword, putting the buckler back on my belt, and drawing the crossbow again. Another Sildoon rode past, slashing one of the giant's thick, exposed legs, and he got clear just as the spiked club swooshed behind him. More quarrels were loosed, one striking the creature, one splintering against a brass plate, and one also hitting one of the Sildoon who was riding past the giant. The soldier changed direction for a moment, ducked, and tried to ride away from the creature, having missed the chance to strike at it. But the eyeless giant was too quick. He only caught the soldier with a glancing blow in the side, but even that crumpled him in the saddle. The jackal rode past, hunched across his horse's neck, and disappeared into the purple columns. Muldus and another soldier screamed together as they rode at the giant, and he spun to face them, bleeding from a dozen wounds, bolts sticking out everywhere. But the attack was a feint, and they raced off to the right and left. But as Morgon came in fast from the giant's rear and brought the long blade of his chopper across the creature's lower back as he passed, the blows would have severed any man in two. But the giant didn't go down. The huge club arced out, but as Morgon ducked and rode clear. The giant tried to take another step, and then screamed in pain, reaching back to feel the newest wound.
Its hand came back covered in blood, and another step caused it to grimace as it wobbled slightly. The Sildoon around it used that opportunity to unload their crossbows, a handful of bolts striking the giant in various spots. Even though they didn't all stick, and the ones that did might not have struck deep, the massive creature bore wounds everywhere, with the one delivered by his Morgon being the worst. It staggered, shuffled sideways, reached out to break its fall on a column, and then dropped to its knees. Braelar called out,
"Loose! Loose, you horse sons!"
5 more bolts struck, and the giant toppled over, dropping its flat club on the earth next to it. Braelar ordered everyone to hold. With the sounds of battle over, there was only the low keening from the columns, and the moans from those who were wounded, but still somehow miraculously survived being struck by the eyeless creature. The captain dismounted, and several others around did as well, though I noticed most of the company behind us stayed on their horses. I climbed down too, shaking, breathing fast, though I'd done next to nothing. The captain, his sister, Muldoos, and his Morgon all slowly approached the giant. And I did as well. Braelar raised his hand, and everyone stopped several feet away. We all stared at the massive body sprawled and bloody in the moss leavings. Even dead or dying, it inspired awe and terror. Its skin looked as thick as the rooters we had seen on the Green Sea. While it hadn't deflected all bolts and blades, the skin was nearly armor on its own, and it kept penetration to a minimum. It was covered in some bizarre asymmetrical design that I mistook for a tattoo of some kind, but looking closer, I saw that it was some scarring or carving in the skin itself. The plates on the hardened leather were odd as well, each slightly different in size, not affixed in a regular pattern, and engraved with some asymmetrical line pattern that echoed what was carved into the giant's pale hide. The giant had what looked to be 2 black manes winding between the spikes on its head and down its back, disappearing into the armor. Sofjin had reclaimed her rancor. "Should we make sure he isn't napping?" she asked, with a crooked smile. Braelar nodded.
"An excellent suggestion. We've already lost too many today. No need to take anything for granted."
Sofjin took a step closer and stabbed the giant in leg with her rancor. The creature stirred, one huge arm flailing once, before growing weak and dropping to the moss again. Muldoo said,
"Plague this!"
He took 3 awkward but quick strides, and then the falchion came down on the back of the giant's neck. The creature convulsed once and started to shift slightly, but even though Muldoos was damaged, he was also incensed. 3 more blows and the falchion finally crunched deep enough into its spine to kill the hulking thing. Braelar looked around quickly before sighting Rudgie.
"You said 2, yes?"
She nodded, eyes still fixed on the dead giant.
"Hi, Cap."
He shouted,
"Be ready, jackals. There is another. Reload and—"
Vinduro called out, though flat and sad-sounding.
"No need, Cap."
Braelar looked at the younger lieutenant as he rode up and dismounted, waiting. Vinduro pulled off his helm, looked at the captain, and said,
"Came in from the side when you were fighting this one. Tore into the troops right quick. Took out 10, maybe more, before we felled the plaguing thing."
Then Vinduro looked at the one Muldoos had just hacked into, and his eyes darted over to Bloodsounder and back to the dead giant. Then, in an almost reverent whisper, he said,
"Plague me? Did we just get attacked by gods, Cap?"
Muldoos was wiping off his falchion.
"Think gods bleed, boy? Or get killed at all by the likes of men?"
He glanced down at the huge creature.
"Monster, maybe. Demon, even. But this ain't no plaguing god. No matter how many horns it's got sticking out of its plaguing head. Might be it's a deserter, might be it's not. But whatever it is, it ain't a plaguing god, that's for damn sure."
We all stare down at the huge body. I had no idea what the others were feeling, but I was still stunned. The ripper we set loose in Alespell was a terror, to be certain. But it still was just an animal. A large, vicious, incredibly fast animal, with no fear of men. But an animal just the same. But this was something else altogether. The leather armor was elaborately tooled and showed amazing craftsmanship. The flat haft of the spiked weapon wasn't simple, but adorned with slight but intricate carvings along its length. This creature was the most terrifying thing I'd ever seen, but it was no animal, and even monster seemed insufficient. Maldus did have a point. No matter how easily the giant ripped through the soldiers or how tough it could be killed. And was no god. But what was it? Rudgy demystified things, though, as she walked around and stopped near its legs that were bigger around than most trees.
Gods, can you imagine the size of the cock on this thing? He'd plague and kill a rooter if he fucked it.
She looked around and stopped at Sofjian.
Come on, you can't tell me you aren't the least bit curious. How big do you reckon it is?
Maldus gave Rudgy a cold, pale stare.
The thing makes Asmorgon look like a dwarf. Managed to see us plenty fine without any plaguing eyes. Must weigh more than a laden wagon, and kill near on 10 men all by its lonesome. And you're worried about its cock?
Rudgy shrugged.
Legitimate question, isn't it? I mean, every male something or other has a cock. Most natural thing in the world, really. Even monsters, or demons, or gods. In fact, you all seem more fixated on your packages than us most of the time. So it sort of comes as a shock you all didn't make the observation first.
Maldus shook his head. Sofjian chuckled, and Asmorgon said,
A dwarf? What's that make you, little man? A plaguing possum?
Maldus started to respond, but Braelar cut him off.
We need to move. We have no idea what alarm was raised, or how many more of them are out there. If nothing else, we need to clear this forest before nightfall, so if we are attacked again, we can use our crossbows to good effect. Make sure the wounded are tended to, and get them back in the saddle. Now.
Sofjian glanced around at some of the other crumpled and bloodied bodies.
And what of your dead, brother?
She asked this with no inflection, almost casually, but watched him very carefully as he directed his response to Venduro.
We don't have time to bury them. Throw them across their horses. They come with us.
As Morgan said, Better if we just leave them.
Then added a belated,
Cap?
As if that made the sentiment better. Maldus spit against a column.
Those are our plaguing brothers, you whopping big horse cunt.
Our plaguing dead brothers, and they'll only be slowing us down. Look, if it makes you feel any better, if you somehow outlive me, you can dump my body in a gorge, or leave it for the crows. Couldn't give a toss either way, because I'll be a plaguing corpse.
No worries, Ogre. I'll be sure to piss on your dead face.
As Morgan's big, bushy eyebrows drew closer together, and there was murder beneath them for a brief moment, but it disappeared as he smiled.
Like I said, do what you plaguing want, mushrooms. Pretty sure I'll be the last man standing, but either way, the truth is the truth. Better to leave them. Say a few pretty words if it makes you sleep better.
Braelar said.
The jackals do not desert our own, alive or dead. Not now, not ever.
He turned away and slipped Bloodsounder on his belt. They ride with us until we have a chance to bury or burn them in honor. And I think we have overstayed our welcome here on this side of the Godvale. Mount up, you horse sons. We have some riding to do. The Sildoon started back towards their horses. Sofjian continued looking down at the behemoth we had finally felled. The victory was a costly one. We certainly couldn't survive too many more victories like that. I glanced back at the columns where we'd first sighted the climbers. They were long gone, having fled sometime during the melee. Turning back to Sofjian, I said, Perhaps some places are better left unexplored. She gave a quick nod, and then said, Perhaps so, Arky. There was sadness there,
though it was impossible to tell if it was more for the lost opportunity or the lost lives.